I'm here with Alexander Mercuris, editor-in-chief of the Duran. Alexander, let's talk about S-400s from Russia going to Serbia. And I want you to explain why this is a game-changing event for Serbia and for the region, especially with North Macedonia getting into NATO, moving into NATO. You have Albania and North Macedonia trying to get into the EU. Macron blocked them for now, but I think they'll eventually get the accession talks sooner or later. Macron will fold. But it looks like Serbia seems to be the last state standing that hasn't folded into the EU-NATO construct. What do you make of this event?
Yes, I mean, the first thing to say is that, of course, Serbia is much the strongest of these various countries. So even though it's not actually fallen, it is a real country, if I can put it like that, with a long history and a strong military tradition. And, you know, beneath it all, you know, a potentially quite strong economy. It is a much more powerful country than all these little microstates that have been created around it, like North Macedonia, Montenegro, Kosovo, all of these sort of places. And of course, Bosnia, which is very unstable and which is bitterly divided. Montenegro is potentially divided also, because there's large numbers of people in Montenegro who are pretty pro-Serb. So it's potentially a strong country. It's also seen by the Western powers as potentially the great adversary in the Balkans. There's always been this plan to try and extend the Western alliance, which is both, you know, NATO and the EU in this context, across the whole of the Balkans in order to shut out Russia from the Balkans. Serbia has this very long, very strong historic connection to Russia. And what it's now doing is it's buying these S-400 missiles. Now, S-400 missiles are the most advanced anti-aircraft missiles anywhere in the world today. They were developed by the Russians, who are the world leaders in anti-aircraft missile technology. They started work on this kind of technology way back in the early 1950s. And in fact, they dominate this sphere of armaments. And the thing to say is that wherever the S-400 appears, American aircraft, military aircraft, basically don't go. The United States has referred to the S-400 as an area denial weapon. They're very nervous of it. Even their stealth aircraft are very nervous of it. And if we look at the deployment of the S-400 missiles in Syria, where the Russians have deployed them, it's been striking that the United States Air Force has avoided all those areas where the S-400 missile system is operating. And apparently, it's been confirmed that the system can actually track American aircraft, including American stealth aircraft like the F-22 Raptor fighter, which is the United States' most advanced fighter aircraft. Now, in terms of Serbia, there is an even greater significance to all this, because, of course, in 1999, the United States and NATO bombed Serbia. There was a war that the Western powers waged against Serbia in order to try to separate the Serbian Albanian populated province of Kosovo from Serbia. And what was interesting about that war is that though the Serbs were operating with a very old Soviet era air defense system, many of their missiles at that time dated from the 1960s, through the great skill of Serbian radar operators, NATO was never able to break that system. So, assuming that the Serbs still have all those skills, combining them with this immeasurably more advanced S-400 system. I mean, in terms of sophistication and capability, it is on an entirely different planet from the kind of systems that the Serbs had in 1999. Combining those skills with the S-400 system means that the United States and NATO loses its military dominance, its aerial dominance over this rich area of the Balkans. So it is a decisive military game changer. And of course, from the Russian-Serb point of view, it consolidates what is now increasingly looking like a de facto unspoken alliance between Serbia and Russia.
What do you make of the timing of this, Alexander? I mean, you know, we just stated it in the video, when we opened the video, there's no doubt that Serbia is becoming, if not already, surrounded.
Yes.
What do you make of the timing in context of what's going on right now in the world today, in Europe today, with these missiles going to, the S-400s going to Serbia?
Well, the first thing to say is that it is, of course, done partly in response to this growing encirclement of Serbia. The Russians are supplying the Serbs with a system, a military system, which will enable the Serbs to better defend themselves in the face of this encirclement. But of course, the politics of this are really very remarkable, because in 1999, Russia didn't act to help Serbia at all. At that time, the Russian government was headed by Boris Yeltsin. Boris Yeltsin was not prepared to risk confrontation with the Western powers on behalf of Serbia. In fact, he sent to Serbia during that war his personal political ally, his former prime minister, Viktor Chernomyrdin. And Viktor Chernomyrdin was instrumental in getting the Serbs, who were actually, winning, in effect, the military conflict at that time. He was able to persuade the Serbs to back off. And doing all of that provoked a major political crisis in Russia, which was eventually led to Boris Yeltsin's resignation and to the rise of Vladimir Putin. Now, it has taken a very long time for the Russians to act on the logic of this political revolution, if you like, that happened in Russia in 1999. But they have increasingly and steadily since then, as their power and self-confidence has grown, and as their alliance, their de facto alliance with China, has strengthened, they made it increasingly clear that they will stand by Serbia in any future conflict. And now, by taking this dramatic step of displaying the S-400 missile system in Serbia, they haven't yet formally, it's important to say this, made the decision to supply it, but they have displayed it there in a way that almost certainly indicates that they shortly will. They are once again signaling to the Western powers that this time, if there is any attack on Serbia, any future attack on Serbia, Russia will stand behind Serbia, and that this is not going to be the same as in 1999, when Russia stood back and allowed Serbia to be rolled over. So it's got a lot of politics, a lot of signaling. And I'm going to say something else. There will be people in the Western capitals who will take note of this, and they will adjust their policies in response to this. Nobody, in the end, wants to run up against the Russians in the Balkans.
Yeah, this may be more of an act of stabilization on the part of Russia, because the Balkans right now, Alexander, at least I have a sense that in the next 5 to 10 years, and you've said it many times, it's a powder keg.
Yes.
And there is a possibility that something will break out over the next decade or so, because things are not as stable as they appear from the outside looking in. So this may have been more of a stabilizing move by Russia to say, look, let's not try any funny business, NATO, EU.
Yes.
Let's keep things as they are, you know, in a peaceful state.
Yes, I'm absolutely that. What has happened, what Western policy has achieved in the Balkans is it has an angry and aggrieved Serbia surrounded now by unstable and divided microstates, Bosnia, Montenegro, Kosovo, and Northern Macedonia, all of them divided internally, with different factions internally, and with Serbia having a grievance against all of them. The only thing that is preventing this thing from exploding into conflict at this moment in time is NATO power, Western power. But Western power is being exerted in the Balkans increasingly against Serbia. So the Russians coming in this way, in this very, very strong and forceful way, by appearing, to talk about supplying the S-400 missiles. And there's an economic dimension, because they're also negotiating to build a spur of the Turk Stream pipeline through Serbia. And they're talking about developing their economic links with Serbia. It establishes a kind of balance of power in the Balkans between Serbia and the Western powers, which in the long run, perhaps, hopefully, will result in a political settlement of this very much still ongoing conflict, as opposed to the sort of military settlement, which I'm sorry to say, I suspect that there are some people in Washington that they still hanker for it.
Yeah, I mean, all these microstates and even the larger states, even Greece and Bulgaria, for example, they all have claims to history and to people and to ethnicities of all these little microstates that have, just kind of turned up in the Balkans.
Yes.
Whether it's Bulgaria and the large population of people in North Macedonia who align themselves with Bulgaria, if it's North Macedonia and Greece, and Macedonia and Thessaloniki, where the Greeks have the claim there. And then you have Albania as well. And Albania even has a claim to North Macedonia. And then they have the Greater Albanian Project, where they even lay claim to some Greek territory. So,
indeed, and Kosovo.
and I was just about to say, and then you get into Kosovo, which is even a more tense situation. So, I mean, this is some stuff that could really explode if it's not treated very carefully.
Well, indeed. So, in fact, I have to say this. I think that the way things are going in the Balkans, and I've said this many times, I think if things are left alone to drift in the direction that they are, then an explosion sometime in the future, in the not so very different future, of some sort is almost certainly inevitable. Anybody who knows the history of the Balkans can see that. So if you're going to have great power competition in the Balkans, I mean, better in some ways if it's structured, and then hopefully you can manage these conflicts more effectively than you could do with the situation where the United States and some of the Western powers who don't understand the Balkans very well simply blunder along with the kind of policies they have at the moment, focusing on Serbia, not because they have any real understanding of the situation in Serbia, but because they have some dim concept that Serbia is somehow an ally of Russia and that must therefore be isolated and ultimately broken. That kind of policy is almost calculated to end badly. And of course, if you start another war in the Balkans between the Western powers and Serbia, then you risk all kinds of problems with Bulgaria, with Greece, with all these other countries. So it's not a good idea. The Russians have interacted with the Balkans since the late 18th century. I mean, Catherine the Great used to send diplomats and fleets and armies to the Balkans. And of course, the Russians were very active in the Balkans throughout the 19th century and, of course, throughout the Soviet period. The Russians know the Balkans very well. They have very, very good specialists in the Balkans. They obviously understand much better the local languages, and they have a far better grasp of the history and tensions that exist in the Balkans than the Western powers do. And in fact, the great, if we go back in time to the world before 1914, the Russians were looking at that time for some kind of diplomatic settlement of the Balkans, the conflicts in the Balkans. And they were warning the other countries that if that didn't happen, there was a risk of a greater war in the Balkans, which might in the end draw in all the major Western powers. That was, of course, what happened, and that was the First World War. So the Russians have a much closer knowledge and keener understanding of the Balkans than the Western powers do. So I get to say this controversially, perhaps. The Russians becoming more involved in Serbia ultimately is a good thing. Westerners won't like it. You see, read all kinds of articles in the media about, you know, the dangers of Russian expansionism in the Balkans and Russian interference in the Balkans. In fact, as you rightly said, in my opinion, it will be a stabilizing factor.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's a stabilizing factor, and it seems that they've learned their lesson from the 1990s, so that you're not going to have an event like what Bill Clinton did to Serbia in 1999. No. It's not going to happen again now with the S-400s. Is that correct?
If the S-400s go there, I don't think there's any chance of it happening, because the US Air Force has repeatedly shown that it is not prepared to go into any area, into any region where these missiles are located. And as I said, they didn't have a happy experience taking on the Serb air defense system in 1999. They're going to be far more reluctant to take it on when it is equipped with this far more sophisticated system than the ones that they had then.
All right. Alexander Mercurius, Editor-in-Chief of The Duran. Thank you very much, guys. If you like this video, click on the subscribe button down below. Hit that like button and hit that notifications bell. Also, go to iTunes and SoundCloud to get an audio copy of this video. You'll find links in the description box. And please donate to The Duran on PayPal, Patreon, and Subscribestar. Your donation really helps us out a whole lot. And when you go to The Duran shop and pick up merchandise, like these wonderful shirts or these magic mugs.
Absolutely. Like magic mugs that I can't be parted
with.
Right. As our viewers will have noticed, those who follow us regularly, I'm not in my own place in London. I am somewhere else in England, in an undisclosed destination. But I could not be parted from my wonderful Duran mugs, specifically this one on this occasion. All beautiful, 15 ounces of it. Beautiful porcelain, marvelous to hold. This one with the coat of arms of the city of Moscow. So you see the double-headed eagle there with the orb and scepter, and St. George slaying the dragon of fake news and untruth, which is what we try to do on the Duran. And of course, we have not just magic mugs like this, or like magic mugs like the one that Alex is drinking from there, because he's also got his own magic mug, which he's now showing to you. But we've also got these amazing shirts of ours, which are 100% cotton. They're beautifully made. I'm wearing one of these marvelous polo shirts, which feels so comfortable and which are so smart. And one looks so wonderful when one's wearing them. And you can see that we have our own double-headed eagle there, beautifully embroidered on it, different from the Moscow one, looking to the east and the west, as we try to do. We try to encompass the entire world on our programs. And we've not just got polo shirts, we've got short sleeve t-shirts, we've got long sleeve t-shirts, we've got hoodies, we've got hats, we've got stickers, all of them of superb quality, if I say so myself. Our competitors all think so. They've been trying to copy our products. I mean, some of them really are absolute dead ringer copies. They look exactly like our products until you buy them, when you realize that they're not like our products at all, because they are of extremely inferior quality. So what are you waiting for? Buy the real thing from our shop, enjoy having these wonderful products that we make, help the Duran, Alex will tell you how to do it.
You'll find the link in the description box down below, theduranshop.com. Alexander McCurse, editor-in-chief of The Duran, thank you very much. Until next time, everybody, take care.